Welcome to Embracing the Muse. I'm your host, Sally Jean Fox, the author of Meeting the Muse After Midlife. And I'm on a quest to discover and understand how we can live our richest, most meaningful, and creative lives at any age, and especially as we age. And I'll be interviewing island creatives to discover what they can share with us about the highs and lows, ups and downs, and possibilities of living and sustaining a creative life. I am so excited today to bring you one of our, cultural leaders on the island. That's what I'd call Liz Shepherd. If you've lived on Vashon Island for a while, you have probably read her writings at the Beachcomber. She's been covering arts and culture and whatever else she might have been asked to do at the last minute. Mm-hmm. And last year, I was so happy to see that she was awarded from the Washington Newspaper Publishers Association, some top awards. Which is, so I'm going to say hi.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And what was the name of the award? Because that was really stunning.
It was a big one.
It was a big one.
It was shocking to me. It was News Writer of the Year.
Oh, my goodness.
And that was in our circulation group. There are three or four News Writers of the Year in this contest, according to the circulation size of the paper. So I was the one for our small circulation group, which was really a big honor, and I didn't expect it at all, but I got it. And I got some other awards too, you know, for investigative journalism and social issues and all kinds of these really hard things that I did in that year of 2023, early 24, when I was by myself, basically, at the Beachcomber. I had to do everything. So,
well, first of all, I want to thank you so much, because we love the Beachcomber, and we also know that it takes a lot of magic as well as subscriptions to keep a local newspaper going. Mm-hmm. And not only to keep it going, but to keep it going with the quality that the Beachcomber has represented over the years. It's really amazing.
Well, thank you. I hope that people read it, and I hope they appreciate it. I know not everybody does, but I think it's really needed now more than ever in our town. You know, it was during COVID that I really buckled down and sort of worked. Our staff was reduced, and all of a sudden it was just me. And I had been the happy little go-lucky arts editor for a long time. But all of a sudden I had to step up. And so during COVID, and I did, and I'm so glad, because I think it helped our community to have a source of news. And that hasn't changed. I mean, every day when I look at social media, it's kind of horrifying to see the sort of misinformation that's being spread. Even, I mean, of course, nationally, but on Vashon as well, people state things that they don't know to be true, and they state them as truth, and then a big discussion ensues, and it's just kind of destructive. Not that people shouldn't talk, shouldn't discuss, shouldn't have a forum for their opinions, but we do have we're really lucky on Vashon to have a newspaper of record, you know, and that we are an award-winning paper, and we try.
Yeah, you're bringing up stuff that's really important, because some people say, well, we can go to Facebook, and there are a couple of Vashon groups on Facebook, but I've heard more people recently say, I don't go there. People go on a polemic. They talk about stuff. It gets nasty. It's not true. And so when you say, as I've done sometimes, how do you get the word out about something on the island? You can depend on the Beachcomber. I like to think you can also depend on Voice of Vashon to give you something that's accurate. But I think sometimes we take it for granted. It's a great resource. So thank you so much for stepping in 2023. And I want to remind people that I'm speaking to the wonderful Liz Shepherd, who's been a reporter, editor, a journalist at the Beachcomber. But before that and with that, there's a lot of cultural creative work that you've done. So let's see if we can, how about giving me the, instead of me reading, giving me the, if you had to do sort of a biographic bio of your creative life. And your all the work that you did with film and getting the Children's Film Festival going. Take me back, you know, maybe 20 years and trace me through. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Short form, but still.
Well, I can go back further than 20 years because...
Where did you get your start first college?
I was a drama major in college at the University of Oklahoma, and I graduated in 1980. Okay. So I think drama majors can do anything. This is basically where you learn to be creative and improvise and work with a group and just all the skills. Really, all the skills you need you can get by being a drama major.
I think so too. I worked with as an organizational consultant. One of my partners had been a professional actor, mm-hmm. and had drama training. Helped so much. Mm-hmm. People didn't go to sleep on his watch.
right. So anyway, from there, I moved to New York. I had an internship in New York. Oh my gosh, here we go with the long story. I lived in New York for 5 years after I graduated from college. And then I moved to Chicago. I worked at an art gallery first, and I worked a little bit in theater. And then I moved to Chicago, and I worked in a little bit more in theater. But then I sort of settled into working for the Chicago Artist Coalition as a writer, because I've always liked to write. That's always been something that I've done. And so I was the editor of a monthly newspaper publication that we put out called Chicago Artist News. And then I somehow got a job working as the director of a children's film festival at a nonprofit film organization there called Facets Multimedia. And that kind of led me up until the time I moved to Vashon. And when I moved to Seattle, I had some kids. Lots of things happened, you know? I mean, in your life, it's just like a long life is filled. It's hard to summarize. But here's what happened next was that I had kids, first of all. That was a huge thing because that's a creative endeavor, too.
Was that the twins?
Uh-huh.
Oh,
that was my beloved
twins,
Ellie and Isaac. Still famous on Vashon, even though they haven't lived here for seven or eight years.
Reputation lives on, yes.
But my tap dancing children. But then I got a job at Northwest Film Forum in Seattle, and I was the director of a children's film festival there. And that's just a wonderful organization. And I had many, 16 years there working at Northwest Film Forum and kind of building and creating content. We'll just call it creation of content for children, classes, workshops, a film festival that happened every January that was an international film festival of children's films. And it was just a fantastic experience to be able to create that over time. Because it was good. It was really good. And it was a little bit different from many other similar festivals. There's a whole circuit of children's film festivals around the world. But it was really a wonderful experience. And then, at some point, I got a job at the Beachcomber, working 15 hours a week, writing our arts news.
As a lark.
As a lark. As just a fun extra. Because my kids were a bit older, and I love working.
Yeah.
So I started doing that, and... that sort of brought me home to the thing that I love to do since childhood is just writing. I love to write. And it's a great outlet to be published every single week, you know, of your life. You can be published and have that pressure and the deadline. And it's not about you. You don't have to dream it up in journalism. You're covering something that's happening that other people are doing. You can write little opinion pieces. It was a really freeing experience for me to work at the Beachcomber, and I discovered how much I really did love journalism, which has always been true. I mean, I was the kid that laid down on the floor with the newspaper when I was, you know, 8 years old and read it from cover to cover and did the puzzle and loved the comics and read the classifieds and read the news. I mean, I just have always loved journalism.
A few years ago, when Leslie Brown was editor-in-chief of the Beachcomber, she and I had a conversation. We actually had a certain disagreement on an issue and had a fabulous conversation about it, in which I was so moved by how she took the sort of ethics of journalism really seriously. Mm-hmm. And I know that's part of what you get in journalism school, is that grounding in ethics and objectivity. You didn't have that.
I didn't have that, but I had Leslie Brown.
Oh, good.
She was my editor.
Oh, yes.
She was my journalism school. And such an influence and such a just a person who was a true mentor to me. And she saw something in me. I think she thought I could be a journalist. I certainly didn't start out really as one, you know, when I started doing it at the Beachcomber. As I said, I saw it as a lark, but she believed in me and she really worked with me in such a wonderful way. She was tough, but she was also complimentary. She also encouraged me when I did something great, even if it was a word I used. She'd just celebrate it. Like, so at one point I was writing this word, I inserted the word hirsute, which means, you know, I was describing a man who was hairy. And I forget the context of the whole thing, but that, oh, we just celebrated the word hirsute for a long time, you know. So Leslie is a really good friend now and still a mentor and still somebody who kind of taught me how to do
it. How wonderful that her legacy lives on. And two, you got on the job training.
Yeah.
To go from being writer to writer journalist, because mm-hmm. they're two different things,
right.
really.
Right.
How do you? You know, one of the things that has impressed me about your writing, especially the cultural pieces, because that's what I follow more, is how you can be objective and yet positive. Because sometimes there's a way that cultural writing can be, let's bring them down a notch, or mm-hmm. let's be overly critical, or let's pretend that there's a gold standard that art should meet, and anybody mm-hmm. who doesn't meet your version of it is kind of slayed on a certain level. But reading your pieces, I feel like you have a way of finding the gold and then presenting that.
Oh, that's nice to hear. I mean, I think that that's what our local newspaper can do. We can celebrate our cultural treasures that we have here and be positive about it. I mean, you say that, and see, I love like snarky theater criticism. You know, like I just revel in it. You know, I read film reviews and the New Yorker and the New York Times and theater reviews, and I just, you know, I just love it. But but that's not what I do here. I mean, I'm not ever going to write a review of anything unless I'm celebrating it, because it's a celebration just to have the opportunity to. And there's something so lovely about this specific cultural scene that always needs to be celebrated, which is just the breadth of it, the diversity, the kids tap dancing on the stage at VCA, how much we love the arts here. And that's what I'm conveying when I review, if I write reviews, which I love to write here, but they're always quite positive.
Yeah, they're positive. And, you know, and we have great stuff here. So it's, I'm reading this book about, I can't remember the name of it, but a woman who spent some years really plunging into the art scene in New York mm-hmm. and feeling like you had to crack the code, and people were so mean. And it was like people were holding on to their treasures and undercutting each other, and nobody got to be art unless somebody thought you were art, and nobody wanted to think you were art. It just, I wanted to shut the book and say, I'd never make art in a culture like that.
Right.
Whereas
right.
on Vachon, I feel like it's somehow pumped into the water system, isn't it? You know, somehow, you know, everybody has a secret creative endeavor out there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we do. We do. And I think that we all think of, I think that part of it is just the fact that there's so many opportunities for people to here to take classes, to learn, to experiment. I mean, we're right. about to have 1448 on Vachon again right now, which is just the craziest theatrical experience.
We should tell people what that is in case they
okay,
don't know.
Okay, 1448 is a theater festival, and oh gosh, it's kind of hard to explain. Everybody comes together on Thursday night with nothing. Nothing exists. You get actors, directors, playwrights, and you get a design. Musicians are also part of it, and you get a theme. We draw a theme out of a hat, and everybody, all the writers go home and they write a play that night, overnight, that the actors start rehearsing the next morning. And then that's presented, all 14 plays are presented that night. Then all the next day, all over again. It happens all over again. So it's this exhausting, exhilarating, messy, good and bad. You know, I mean, some things are more successful than others. And, you know, it's just this great experience of creation. And an audience gets to, it's enjoyable for an audience as well. I mean, because it's 10-minute plays. If something doesn't work, you go on to the next one. And
you know what well, first of all, how people really had to bust to get anything at all. And that spirit of collaboration, because people have to, you know, you don't know what role, you don't know what your theme is, you don't know anything, you're given to it, now go.
Right.
And so, so it's kind of a team sport in that way.
It is such a team sport, and it has this other thing that I love, which is the deadline. The deadline is like so dramatic, and so like you've got to do it, and I love the deadline.
So talk
as
to me
about creative force.
Yeah. Do you work by deadlines? Is that something that inspires you?
Yeah, every week.
Every week. But before, when you were working with the children's film festivals, were deadlines important?
Well, I mean, we had to have a festival ready by on a certain date, and it had to be perfect, and every like 10 bazillion things had to be defined. And so we have consecutive deadlines getting closer to it, you know, press deadlines or travel deadlines for filmmakers, or, you know, workshop deadlines for teachers. And so it was a series, and you know, it was a job that was filled with deadlines too, but not every week. I love the quick deadline, the like turn it around. But like today is Thursday, and I haven't written a single thing for next week's paper. So it'll be fun to see what I write on Saturday or Sunday or Monday.
I totally get it. It's interesting for me on a couple levels, because I'm studying the creative process and how to encourage us regular folks to really bring out our creative expression. And a lot of times creativity can seem pretty right brain. You know, you want to have inspiration and you want to have room to kind of float around and figure out what you want to do. So that's the one side of it. But the other side is structure. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's really nice to slip into a channel that says, here's the channel, here are the markers, ready, set.
Well, you must have felt that with your book, you know, because that is a memoir is kind of a structured thing. I mean, there's a form to writing something like that. And, you know, you can tap in and flow into that structure. And that's what's really helpful if you're on a deadline.
What really helped me almost more than the book, because the book came a little bit later in my process, but maybe 10 years ago, I started writing a weekly blog.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was taking a writing class at the time over at Vashon Center for the Arts, and somebody said, you know, blog, it's kind of like that's not real writing. And I went, tell me about it. For, you know, 10 years, almost every Thursday, I have produced 750 to 1,000 words. Don't tell me that didn't develop my writing muscle.
Right.
And
absolutely.
When I go off it, like to take a vacation, I'm always a little nervous because, you know, it's like a muscle you have.
Uh-huh.
Like on Thursday, it's like when I go back home today, I will have my husband proof the blog and it will go out by 2:00.
Wow.
You know, it's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's a muscle.
Yeah.
And it actually supports my process, because I go, if by Wednesday I don't have a topic, I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
We're going to pull the miracle rabbit out of this hat.
Right. And that's so fun, isn't it?
It is.
I love back to the deadline.
You know,
I push it. I've written many an editorial on Tuesday morning as we went to press.
Oh, my
goodness.
Just
because I have to, and I didn't. And it's amazing how things flow if you have a form, if you have a structure, if you know kind of where to start. You can end it on and wrap it up. I'm not saying they were great editorials.
It doesn't like get your stomach all kinked up on Sunday and Monday when you don't know where you're going?
No, because I know I can do it.
Oh, that's
great. If I have to.
Yeah, so you've developed the chops over time to know that that it can help you to have the deadline and to know that you're going to come through.
Right. It's a great confidence builder.
Yeah, no.
You almost get cocky. I'm serious. A lot of those editorials were not that great. You know, I mean, but some of them were awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, And I won a prize for one of them. I wrote about orcas. And I wrote an editorial about orcas after the orcas visited Quartermaster Harbor.
Right.
This very strange, mysterious visit that they had. And I wrote a news story, and then I wrote the editorial. And the editorial came on Tuesday morning as we went to press. And it was, it just came out. It just flowed because I knew the subject. I was immersed in the subject, and it just came out. It was really good. Won a prize. So I don't know. Deadline. I'm all about the deadline.
Yeah, and embedded in what you're talking about, I'm also thinking that you probably have a standard where, although you'd like things to be great, you can handle good enough.
Oh, yeah.
On Tuesday morning, if there's nothing else, good enough is good enough.
Oh, yeah. That's all what it's all about, It needs to be accurate, and it needs to be readable, and it needs, Leslie Brown taught me this word, decent. And decent is actually a high standard.
Yeah.
But it's not, you don't say it's great or it's decent. Mm-hmm. It's got all the pieces and it fits the structure and you feel okay. You feel good about it.
Yeah.
Decent.
That's a great word. That's a great word because the other end of the spectrum, and I see this with friends who are talking about, writing their memoirs or writing their books, is that we can start with a standard that's really unmeetable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great to be aspirational. But too often that means you'll never get your book out.
Decent is a high standard.
Yeah.
Already.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's a word that I use a lot. It's a decent news story.
Decent sounds like it means it's good. Mm-hmm. It's good.
Solid.
It's solid. It's professional. It presents well. But if you were to really tweak it, could there be another standard? Yes. But do you need that now? No.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a real firm believer in good enough and keep going,
Yeah, absolutely. Solid. Solid. That's solid. Another word. Yeah. Leslie word.
How wonderful. Well, I know you started out as a drama major, and I know you've had kids on stage. Mm-hmm. Have you had played around with being on stage yourself in the past years?
Well, not for a while. I did something on Vashon several years back, and I've written some plays. I wrote three plays in Chicago, and then one of those plays was produced here on Vashon. It was about my mother's, it was kind of a journalistic effort. It was about my mother's, one of her best friends who was married 14 times.
Oh.
And about her life.
Yeah.
It was kind of a memoir. And so that was produced here several years ago on Vashon. And I wrote for 1448. And so I like writing plays. It's harder for me. The structure is a little trickier and it's hard. And I haven't practiced a lot, but sometimes I think I would like to try that some more.
Yeah.
Those are things that I'd like to try to do.
You're not jumping back in this year.
I'm not jumping back in this year. I might help.
Yeah.
But they have all new people. It's really important for them to give everybody a chance and get new people. And there's some great new people coming to it this year. I did it 3 years in a row. So I think a lot of us who had done it so many times, they're looking for new voices.
I love that because there is a certain crowd that's well known on the island as actors and directors and all. And to be able to build the new talent, find the younger talent, the folks who have moved to the island can still be welcomed.
Absolutely.
That's all pretty great.
Yeah, it's really great.
Yeah.
So
you look, and I don't want to make any assumptions, but I suspect we're in the same generation. We're past 60, let's say.
We're past 60.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm past 70. So, the question I live with sometimes is when I saw your kids, they just exuded creativity at age 10. They were just on fire and it's so fun to see how kids sometimes naturally fall into it. But I'm also really curious about what can happen to us as we pass 65 and go into another stage of life and how that may also be able to support our creativity. Do you have any sense of that? Like what's changed in you in ways in which you potentially have become more creative as you've aged?
Well, I think when you're young and you're, I don't know. It's not, when you're young, you're discovering now who you are, of course, you know, and the possibilities seem endless, you know, in a way. And I think that what I've gotten to now is that in this stage of my life, and I'm 66, I think I look a little bit older than 66, but anyway, I'm 66. And I think what I've kind of gotten to is that I know who I am at this point. I know where I'm skilled, and I know what I can do, and what may be beyond me, you know? And so but yet I do have this urge to push a little bit now at this time of my life and try to get that more childlike idea of myself back, is like that maybe I can do other, you know, maybe I don't know completely who I am and what I'm capable of and what I can do creatively. So, and yet I also feel like I have a bit of a deadline. My love of deadlines does not extend to, you know, too many more years, but I forget the question, but.
Well, just looking at how age affects our creativity. Mm-hmm. And the ways in which it can affect it positively. We know ourselves, we know some of our limits, but we also can maybe start to play again.
Right. And I wish that I had the time and the depth and the bandwidth to play a little bit more. And I do, actually. I'm not the editor of the paper anymore, and currently. And I have a little bit more time to imagine and think about things I like to do. And
any ones on the horizon, or if places where you're like, oh, maybe I'll try this.
I don't know. I'm a little bit, it seems so selfish, so I don't know if I'll do it, but I feel like a little bit of maybe a little bit more thing, like, you know, maybe going back in time. Maybe revisiting some of the places that I've lived, and some of the people that I've known and the forces that shaped my awareness of life would be an interesting thing to look into, to see if I could write well about it. I think I could. When I started writing a long time ago, it was usually about my childhood and about, you know, when I was thought I was so smart at age 25 or whatever, you know, I would write about my childhood.
Yeah.
And sort of growing up in the mid-South, you know, at my grandparents' farm in Texas, and some of those people that I knew, and this sort of Southern influence and rural influence that I experienced growing up. And so I think about that.
It sounds like it'd be fascinating.
And I need a little travel, yeah.
Yeah, and also the kind of thing that we can do where we can do, what was the word that Leslie gave you? We don't necessarily have to crack a bestseller with our reflections on growing up in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's satisfying, if it's good, if it feels like it brings us forward,
mm-hmm.
And maybe inspires a few other people, maybe mm-hmm. that's good enough, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's for me, that's a question that I would ask after 60. I couldn't have said that when I was 30 and trying to make a living. Mm-hmm. It would have been a whole different question.
Right. Yeah. Right. And I think that another thing that, I think that that's sort of what I think about when I think about creative things that might still happen.
Sweet.
For me.
Yeah.
And maybe return a little bit to playwriting as well. I don't know.
Yeah. There's no commitment. It's just a step at a time to be discovered.
Right.
And
I have another project I'd like to do, which is a creative project, but I could, which is that, and with journalism, I would like to write more. I would like to write people's obituaries. Okay, now this is going to sound really strange, but a news obituary. I've written many for the Beachcomber. It's a form. It's a structure that I love. I love the structure. It's so clear what you need to do when you're writing a news obituary. And there's so many fascinating, wonderful people I would like to interview them and have this all like sort of and kind of do what they do at bigger publications like the New York Times, sort of have it in the bag, you know, sort of have it, you know, in the files,
yeah,
ready to go and updated. This is assuming I'm going to live forever, but a lot of obituaries for the New York Times die before they publish. Like this one that was just published about Jimmy Carter was written by somebody who's already died. And Peter Baker, you know, worked with it to refresh it and bring it up to date and everything. But these are all things that are filed. I just think it'd be fascinating to talk to people about their life, just to do an interview about with people on fashion about their lives and then sit down and write something.
I think it'd be brilliant. I would love that. And I think, I think it also could be really inspiring because when I was writing my book, I had been inspired by this woman named Aideen who used to live on the island. And I remember when she was in her 80s and I invited her to be part of the garden club. And she said, no, I love the garden club, but I need to protect my time for writing. And she must have been 86 or so at the time. And so I wanted to know, who is that woman? And so I went and chased down her obituary, wanted to find out, you know, a little bit more about her. And I found this one quote, or maybe a little bit of more information that said that when she died, she was, she'd almost finished her memoir. And she had a book of poetry that came out 2 months before her death. Those are golden,
mm-hmm.
you know, to know that somebody at 90 plus
right.
still had that engagement, that she was monitoring her time, she was making sure she still wrote. I thought, I'm hanging that one on my wall.
No, they can be the most, I mean, I love reading them.
Yeah.
Like professionally written news obituaries of.
Oh, I think that's a fabulous
anyway, idea. Anyway, so I sort of want to do Vashon edition. Now, that's a bestseller on Vashon,
well,
maybe.
I can see the title. You're not dead yet.
Right.
You know, obituaries by Liz Shepherd.
I don't even know how to do it. You know, how the, I mean, I know the famous, you know, the world leaders and famous people and famous actors and screenwriters and everything. You know, that a journalist will approach them and say, I'd like to write a story about your life. It's not going to be published right away. But, do they say that they're writing the obituary? I don't know that part at all. Or whether they just think they're being interviewed for posterity by somebody.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure they would be savvy, depending on who they were.
I have to do a little more research on
this. It'd be so fun. I can't wait to find out what you find out.
But wouldn't it be good?
Yeah. Because you've been at the heart of, you know, I called you at the epicenter of creativity on Vashon. This may be a hard question to answer, but how would you characterize our community, both in terms of its strengths, in terms of creative expression and what people are doing, and maybe if there's some holes or weaknesses, what would you see there if you, you know?
In our creative community?
As a creative, you know, like you were taking, because you kind of have the eagle eye on the community. You're watching things come forward every week. And we both agreed that this is amazing, you know, piped in creativity into mm-hmm. the water system kind of mm-hmm. community. But it's hard to step back from it and say, how would you describe this creative community for what it is and maybe even for what it isn't, which I've never thought about. So I'm curious what you'd come up with.
Yeah, that's a hard question. I mean, I think overall it's a very welcoming community. And, you know, we talked a little bit about how hard it is to make it in a bigger city. And mm-hmm. I lived in Chicago and New York. And, you know, here everyone, it's incredibly welcoming. And here we are on the radio, and I've had a radio show. And, you know, here everybody gets their own radio show on Vashon. I love that.
If you want it.
If you want it and you want to do the volunteering that comes with it for VOV, go right ahead. But it's, I think we do give everybody a chance. I think that there are, I don't know if I were to, I've seen some just wonderful nights, magical nights of theater here that were beautiful because they were community driven. So I'm not saying that, I think community theater can be very, very, very beautiful. Community theater is when you know the people that are on the stage and they're your friends and you might go to church with them or you might go to be in a book club with them, or they might be your child's teacher at school, and all of a sudden you're seeing them as just these marvelous celebrities on stage as well. But it's community. It's somebody you know. I think sometimes we miss that element where everyone is trying to celebrate constantly the fact that we're creating world-class productions, you know, here, or and sometimes maybe they're not world-class. Maybe they're just for us, and I don't know.
That's too.
And that's a good thing. Yeah. That's a good thing that we have our own creative identities here, and people who flow back and forth between being a lawyer, you know, being a prosecutor in Seattle, and then being in the, the band what I'm talking about, the Portage Phil. You know, I mean, here I always look at David Hackett on stage playing, who's a hard-hitting prosecutor in Seattle, and he's playing with Portage Phil, and I'm just like, with Lou Engles, who's playing, and you know, who's our beloved, iconic owner of this place, of this gas station that is so picturesque and beautiful and good at what they do. And so sometimes there's that element. I wish people would step back and see it and celebrate it more for what it is here and less outward looking, like, does it measure up to, am I going to get my album, you know, is it going to be my CD going to sell well, and am I going to be famous, or any kind of sort of this virus of wanting to be better known than you are. I don't know.
No, that's a great point. Way. I love that you're bringing that in, because it adds a piece that I hadn't thought about, because I get concerned that our culture is so celebrity oriented,
mm-hmm.
and so, you know, creating is so that you can make it, so you can get the likes, the clicks, the money, the sales, all of that other stuff, which mm-hmm. frankly, not that many people will ever get.
Right.
Whereas we all have the power to express ourselves creatively. And when you have something on the community where you see your neighbor
mm-hmm.
performing or singing or creating some art, there's a way it's more connected. Like mm-hmm. you can say, oh, maybe I could do that thing that
exactly.
I love. Because making it to a new album and that goes viral, no, probably not, because so few make it. But being able to open my voice and sing, you know, or join the chorale, or, mm-hmm. you know, when the free range was around and people could sing together, you know, I could do that.
Right.
And that can be inspiring in a whole different way. You know?
And it can be inspiring for audience members, too. If we go to cultural events or art shows or theater or talks, lectures, listen to VOV.
Yeah.
To just kind of realize that this is our own cultural ecosystem, and that it's good enough, you know? I mean, it's good enough that we're all connected in this way together on Vashon. And it's something sort of different than what you're going to experience in the cutthroat cultural realms of New York or Chicago or a place like that.
Yeah, so. And that the few people who have made it on a certain level, you know, in order to thrive here, they have to kind of become Vashonites in their own way. And I did an interview with Isaac Slade, and I was, you know, intimidated lead singer of the Fray. You know, mm-hmm. I'd never been with a big name rocker before. But now when I see him around town, he's just like Isaac with the two kids,
right.
you know, in the record store, and the hi guy, how are you doing?
Right.
And I thought, wow, that's an amazing thing, both that the community could wrap their arms around him, you know, mm-hmm. and say, hey, guy, and acknowledge, you know, that he has an amazing past, but that could, too, be a part of our landscape.
Right.
There are people who are famous here, but, but they still can be a part of the community if they choose. Yeah.
Right, right. I mean, I think Pete Droege is another example
of that.
Yeah, Pete
is so wonderful that way.
And, you know, I just found out he's doing another show, and it's coming up at VCA, and that's really exciting. And I think our the way that he embraces Vashon as a place to create right now is really great, because he was not on stage for many years because he was facing some health challenges.
Right, right.
And but where he chose to come back was Vashon. And I think that that's really beautiful, where he set foot on stage again after being away for a while was Vashon Island. And I think that that's really special,
yeah.
You know, and something about our community that works really well.
So. Yeah, because I think, you know, I know that Pete's had the challenges with chronic fatigue, mm-hmm. and Isaac also admitted, you know, that it was really mentally stressful to be out on stage like that. To be able to say, you know, it's okay to have a healthy environment. It's okay to have a community that right. can, you know, a place where you can get nurtured by long walks and being by the water and going to Island Center Forest and stuff. That can be part of the artistic life, too. You don't have to live at the high pitch of neurosis.
Or there will never be a bad review of your work in the Beachcomber.
Yeah,
never.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Never.
Yeah, we'll yeah. celebrate. Nobody will gun you down, you know. So. Well, super. Thank you so much. And thank you both for your time, but also for just being a pillar.
Oh.
You know, to so many creative endeavors, and to be the one who can be a first line of applause at the same time you produce your work that is, okay, get the word again.
Decent.
Decent.
All right.
I really appreciate
that's the
that.
Title of my book, Decent. Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks again. Sally.
Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to being back soon and bringing you another conversation with an island creative who can show you how it's possible to embrace your muse and live your richest and most creative life. Till then, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Voice of Vashon, 101.9 FM, for hosting this show. I'm your host, Sally Fox, and I look forward to being with you soon.